Are you living paycheck to paycheck? Maybe it's time to explore how your emotions control your life and your money. If your money nerve is pinched, join Bob for lively conversation and helpful tips to live a more abundant life. Have a healthy relationship with your money and take back your power to choose. Welcome to the Money Nerve Radio Show with your host, Bob Wheeler.
You are listening to the Money Nerve Radio Show on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, live on 1510 AM WMEX Boston. Join me every fourth Sunday of the month at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, or listen to the replays weekly on Fridays at 3 p.m. and 3 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm your host, Bob Wheeler, and we are here to learn more about money and our struggles with self-sabotage and finding a better life. If you want to learn more about the Money Nerve, you can check me out at themoneynerve.com. On our show today, we're going to identify and examine the struggles of financial history that bind us to our past and break open new possibilities, creating new roadmaps for the future. We've got two great guests today, the debt-free guys. With 13 years of combined experience in financial services, John and David were two 30-something professionals with $51,000 of combined credit card debt, living in a basement apartment and not living the life of which they dreamed. They fixed this. The debt-free guys are now out of debt and combine their personal and professional experiences with money to help others. They use their blog, www.debtfreeguys.com, social media, and books to help others become money conscious, live debt-free, and most importantly, have fun. The debt-free guys have published three ebooks in the Money Conscious series and a fourth hard copy book called The Four Principles of a Debt-Free Life. They are working on a forthcoming book to be published in the fall of 2015. Welcome, the debt-free guys. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing? Thank you for having us.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Absolutely. So you got into lots of debt, and you have now a recipe for eliminating the debt. What's your story?
Well, this is John. I'll go ahead and start. Right after I graduated college, my grandparents gave me some money, and shortly after that, I moved out to Denver, Colorado. And I felt like at that time I had arrived. We call that arrival moment where we graduated college, we were about to embark on a career, and I felt like that justified me needing to buy a new car, brand new furniture that I couldn't afford, artwork and all sorts of stuff, just to make myself feel like I had finally arrived at being an adult. Shortly after I got out here to Denver, Colorado, I had, you know, several thousand dollars worth of credit card debt, and I was drowning in that debt till shortly after, about a year or so after David and I had gotten together.
This is David. I'll go ahead and share my experience. My first experience with debt was when I was about 19. His parents had co-signed on a credit card for me to use when I went on vacation in case of emergencies. I went to Ireland and England for 3 weeks and had an awesome vacation, came back with that credit card maxed out, but never once had experienced an emergency. I learned the pitfalls and the excuses to use a credit card. And similar to John, it wasn't until, I think it was almost 18 years later, that I finally had completely zeroed out all of my credit card debt. So I lived with credit card debt for 18 years, roughly.
And in that 18 years, did you find that you felt guilty, you felt okay, you felt like you'd never get out of it, or like what was going on for you when you were building this empire of debt?
That's a good way to call it.
Empires, right. You know, I think that for each of us individually, we have those highs and lows of spending and emotional experiences with debt. There's that great feeling of going out and buying something, that immediate rush of acquiring something or spending money on a particular experience. So you love that, but then we have that nagging once a month bill that comes in the mail that takes you to the other end of the spectrum. And I think I went through that cycle. One interesting thing is experience that I had, I don't know if, I'm sure others have had this, but I was living in South Dakota for a time period, and I didn't have a great job, wasn't making a lot of money. I was using my credit card a lot to live off of, and I got to a point where I didn't have any money. I had called my parents to borrow some money. They sent me some money. I deposited that money in my checking account, went to use it the next day, and the money was gone. I didn't realize that a credit card company could garnish your checking account, and that's exactly right. What happened to me. I think that was probably the lowest point, was that I had basically begged my parents for money to cover myself, and because of my credit card debt, I had to go back and do it a second time.
And what would you say, looking back, because one of the things for a lot of people out there, I think myself included, there's a certain level of denial, maybe, when we're working our way into this debt. And, for you, how did you not make yourself go crazy? Or were you going crazy? Or, because you kept probably using the card when it was available, or maybe they were all maxed out and you couldn't use them anymore. But, what was that process like emotionally or mentally?
Yeah, I think that credit card companies and banks, financial institutions, they are tuned into the way we work emotionally. Mm-hmm. And they know that all they have to do is raise the balance, available balance a little bit, and you're going to be okay. You're going to feel good. You're going to go out and spend. That was, to me, that was my primary problem, was every time I got a increased balance, available balance on my credit card, I looked at it as my money. Yay, I have $500 extra to spend or $1,000 extra to spend. And I
right.
did it. And there wasn't a mental trigger to me say, hey, is this really your money, or should you be spending this? Is this wise? That's not there, especially for the young, inexperienced individuals, kids in college, individuals who are just getting out of high school and starting their first job. That's a major point that we would love to share with them, is that when you have a credit card, don't ever look at it as your money. It's never your money. You're always borrowing it from somebody else.
I think, too, that there's a problem in that we don't often with our family or our friends. And so for me, it was very easy for me to just deny the debt that I had. I knew that there was a balance there, but if I thought about it too much, it was like a survival mechanism where I just turned it off. I didn't think about it, because if I did, then it was too stressful and depressing. And I didn't want to live like that. But then I never actually created a plan until a little over 10 years ago to actually get out of debt. It almost felt like it was insurmountable.
Right. Yeah, the funny thing, well, there's two things. One, I saw something that said basically credit cards are for when you can't pay for something now, but you want to pay more than what it's worth, use a credit card.
Exactly.
That'll take you right down that path.
Yeah, that's true.
And the other thing is, I think a lot of people judge themselves and they judge other people, saying, how can a college-educated person in finance get into such a financial rut? Like, how is that possible?
Yeah,
what would you say to that?
In hindsight, it does seem impossible, but I think it was the biggest problem was because we didn't talk about money, and I never carried that into my adult life. And even though we were helping people with their finances at our day job, we were financial messes ourselves. And part of that, I think, was not understanding the difference between needs and wants and living below my means, and understanding exactly how credit worked. I understood finance, but I didn't necessarily understand exactly how credit worked and how quickly it can,
Right.
Yeah. One of the other things, that, Bob, I think that I have a saying that I like to use, a little line. I like to remind people that using a credit card or using credit is anchoring your future earnings to the past. Your future is going to be spent on something either you have consumed, worn, or own that's already in the past, especially on experiences. And I don't think that I ever learned that. I didn't learn that from my family. I didn't learn that from school. It wasn't, that wasn't out there as, oh, you know, there is this potential slavery of being anchored to your past. And I think that's probably part of the reason why John and I both got into so much credit card debt was, like our tagline, we love to say, be debt-free, have fun, be money conscious. I think that when you first start out in life, and for unfortunately for a lot of people, longer into your life, you focus on the have fun part. You don't realize that it's possible to have fun while being money conscious and being debt-free. We just have this automatic, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to do it all. And
I want it now.
And especially when we're young, there's always, oh, well, I'll take care of that in the future. You know, oh, it's only $1,000. I can pay that off in a year.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you're 33 and you're living in a basement apartment.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I personally feel, and you may feel differently, but I feel like the media really encourages people to go for the instant gratification, delay paying, we'll give you interest free for 18 more months, and like, go have it now. You deserve it. Why wait for everything that you deserve?
Exactly. We needed to update our cell phones a couple months back, and I went to the store to get a new cell phone for both of us. And the girl that was trying to sell me the payment plan as opposed to letting me pay for the phones with cash couldn't understand why I wouldn't choose the payment plan. And
right.
I could pay for the phones, both phones, in cash that day and be done with it, or according to her, I could pay it over the course of 2 years and still not even own my phone.
Right.
It just was abstract to her. So, I think we've built a society where we live in the temporary. We don't, you know, we live in the moment. We don't think about the long-term consequences. And we live in a throwaway society, so, you know, you don't keep a phone for longer than 2 years. It seems
right.
Logical to buy a new phone or a new computer every 18 months. Maybe have a song that you listen to for a week, and then you buy a whole bunch of new songs. It's just everything's very temporary. You don't have that anything solid to hold on to, like an old-fashioned record.
Right.
We just dated ourselves.
I didn't say that.
Yep. Some people know what but records are still. So.
I think it should be heartening to your listeners to know that we were two financial services professionals, and we're not unique in the industry, that we're great with helping other people manage their money, but weren't doing so great with managing our own money. So I think oftentimes people get a little bit depressed and they think about how they've messed up their finances, and they take it as a personal failure, but it's kind of out there. A lot of people are having the same problem, regardless of how much money they're making or regardless of what industry they're in.
Absolutely. The two things, I made this little note to myself when I was listening to you talk, but it seems to me that at least for me growing up and conversations I've had with a lot of my clients, that conversations about money either equal shame or a conversation about money equals conflict. And so a lot of families won't talk about money because it's actually not a conversation. It's a conflict. It's a fight. Or talking about money means we have to share all our failures and where we're weak. And we, you know, it's just one of those things that people don't run around telling people, hey, I've got $30,000 worth of debt and I just filed for bankruptcy. How are you? Right? We just don't.
Right.
We're like, no, everything's fantastic. Just don't look too deeply because otherwise it'll all fall apart.
We tie so much of our self-worth to our finances. You know, if I tell you how much I make a year and it happens to be less, I find out it's less than or more than what you make, that kind of, in some way or another, we both see ourselves differently because of it. And it shouldn't be the
right.
case. You know, how you contribute to society and who you are as a person is what really should matter, not whether or not I make $10,000 or $20,000 more or less than you.
Right. But this is a society where if you're driving the inferior car or you're, you know, not going to the nicer restaurants, some people will frown upon you.
Right now we have a 2002 Jetta.
Yeah.
And it's pretty beat up, but it's been paid off for about 6 months.
Six years.
And very often we'll drive to work and we'll see some younger person in a nice Audi or a BMW, Mercedes, whatever. And we kind of chuckle because, you know, that could have been us 10 or 15 years ago. And we think, wow,
right.
We're better off financially now than we ever have been. And part of it is because we no longer felt the need to live up, keep up the Joneses and maintain that new car every couple of years.
Go ahead. I have a kind of a joke bumper sticker that I would love to make to put on my car that basically says, my car is paid for and my retirement is worth more than your car.
Right.
I think most people, they focus on their car or their house, but my retirement plan is worth more than your house. And I'm not talking about the equity in your house. It's worth more than your house and
right.
your car. That's what I take
right.
pride in. I don't take pride in what I drive down the road or what I sleep in or it sits in a parking lot.
Right. No, I think that's true. And you know, I deal with a lot of people in the entertainment world in Hollywood, and clients will often say, oh, I know you work with this other client. Boy, I wish I had their life. And I know their finances, and I think, no, you don't. But it's all an image, right? It's an image. And if, you know, that person that's driving that brand-new Tesla or that brand-new Mercedes is barely making the payment, and they're, you know, having medical issues worrying about making that next payment because they're on the verge of bankruptcy, and everybody else is looking at them saying, gosh, I wish I were just like them. So
right.
I think we put out this false image often that we want everybody to think we've got it together. We don't want to mess
right.
up the story.
We're tying our self-worth to that image that we make a ton of money. I mean, I don't want to call anybody out specifically, but every so often you read in the news of another celebrity who you thought had millions and millions and millions of dollars, you know, filing for bankruptcy.
57.
Right. It happens more very frequently, I think, and it's always surprising, but it's always, again, the heartening to know that, that it's not about how much you make. It's about how you manage what you do make.
Right.
Yes. It's not about
so what would you say? What would you say are some of the best tips for becoming debt free? How do we get started? How do we do this? And how do we also help get ourselves out of the story of I know they did it, but I can't do it. They don't know my whole story, and they probably don't have the same circumstances, so it was easier for them. So how do I get out of that story? And what are the tools that I start to use to get out?
I think that the first hurdle to overcome for anyone is the idea that I can't. Because if you say you can't, you won't. And then the other key is to remember that there are millions of people living amazing lives who are not spending more than they make. And you can be one of them. There are a lot of things that you can do. Fun activities, things you can do with your family and friends that don't cost $100 every time you go out. It's this mental mindset that you need to take. That's that first, I think, is the first step that you can do this. You can get out of debt. When John and I sat down and we looked at our credit card debt and we said $51,000, then we looked at how much we were making and we were like, this is going to take us a long time.
Right.
And The time that it took you to get in debt is always going to be shorter than the time it is to get out of it, because you're spending like crazy when you're getting in debt, whether it's a major purchase that gets you in debt or it's those nickel and diming that get you in debt. It's just going to take you longer. And so it's a mental condition that you have to just say to yourself, I'm committed to doing this. Visualize what it feels like, what you will look like physically, emotionally, when you would be debt-free. Keep that in the back of your mind that, you know, that was one of the things John and I would remind ourselves about over and over again. Can you imagine what it's going to be like when we make that last payment on the credit card? when we actually start to save money instead of paying off debt. You know, focusing on those experiences. And then the important thing is you have to stop the bleeding.
Yeah, that's key. You do have to stop the bleeding. I think the pivotal moment for David and me was that when we finally had the discussion, which is several weeks in the making, of what is it we really wanted out of life? Did we want the big, gigantic house? Did we want the fancy car? Did we want the designer clothing? Who exactly are we? And we were able to narrow down that there's a lot of other stuff that we did not want. What we did want was to travel primarily, and then be prepared for retirement. And once we figured out exactly what our goals were, what it is that we wanted, and not what somebody else thought we should want or what we felt like we were supposed to want, once we knew exactly what we wanted, then we could focus on those goals. And that was the driving factor in us getting out of debt.
I'm just going to make one other comment here, Bob. You used a phrase earlier, and it's one that I think that a lot of people in our society get used to using, but I think it's very detrimental. It's I deserve ... or because of blah, 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 I deserve. And the reality is that everything that each of us has in our life is exactly what we have earned. When we had $51,000 in credit card debt, we had earned $51,000 in credit card debt. We hadn't earned enough money to pay for what we were buying. And so we encourage individuals to think about what it is that they want to earn in life, what it is that they're willing to earn their money for. Do you want to be that individual who takes nice vacations and that's why you're going to work? Do you want to be – you can have everything. You can get everything that you want, but you have to earn it. Nothing is going to come to you because you deserve it.
Right.
I think
no, absolutely.
One of your listeners saying, "Well, the John David situation is definitely different than mine," and that may be the case. We certainly identify with certain people. However, there's a whole host of information out there, tons of personal finance blogs, in addition to Money Nerve and DebtFreeGuys.com, of couples or individuals who have different situations, but are also they all have the same goal of getting out of debt. Some have a lot more than $51,000 worth of credit card debt. Some have a spouse and children to take care of while they try to crawl out of debt. So I think that there are resources out there on the internet if people are interested, trying to find someone that they can better identify with. They should definitely do some searching online.
No, absolutely. And I want to continue that vein of thought. We're about up for a break. Just want to remind the listeners that they're listening to the Money Nerve Radio Show. I'm the host, Bob Wheeler, and my guests today are the Debt-Free Guys, David and John. And if you want to call in with a question or if you have a comment, please feel free to call us at 617-237-1234 or 866-338-9663. We'll be back after the break.
Tired of having more month than money? Maybe it's time to make a change. The Money Nerve Radio Show provides tools for you to manage your money and reduce your stress. Listen to the Money Nerve Radio Show with Bob Wheeler the fourth Sunday of each month at 6 p.m. Eastern. Visit themoneynerve.com to download smart financial tools. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Join us every first Sunday of the month at 7 p.m. for Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, where you'll discover life wisdom and achieve greater spiritual awareness. Through Cynthia's coaching tips, healing stories, and inspirational interviews, you'll improve your relationships, find greater balance, and achieve inner peace today. Join thousands who've transformed their lives through Heart Living. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Tune in every first Sunday at 6 p.m. for Maximum Success, the Coach Bruce Show. You'll learn success strategies to take your game to the next level from performance consultant John Brubaker. Maximum Success explores why winners win and teaches you the keys to peak performance. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Are you where you want to be financially? If not, it's time to create a new path. Let go of negative judgments and worry from the past. Embrace yourself and know that you are not alone. Order an autographed copy of Bob's book, The Money Nerve, Navigating the Emotions of Money, at themoneynerve.com. The program is part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Before you start your financial journey, be sure to set your goals. Decide what steps need to be taken to reach your goals and visualize your new financial path. Need some help? Follow The Money Nerve on Facebook and Twitter. And be sure to sign up for The Money Nerve monthly newsletter at themoneynerve.com. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Listen to the Money Nerve Radio Show with Bob Wheeler on the fourth Sunday of each month. Call into the show at 617-237-1234. Bob wants to hear from you. Sharing your story will help others find a healthy relationship with their money. Celebrate your successful money moments on Twitter with hashtag TheMoneyNerve. Email Bob Wheeler at info@themoneynerve.com. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
And you're listening to the Money Nerve Radio Show on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. I'm your host, Bob Wheeler, and today my guests are the debt-free guys, David and John. So welcome back, David and John. We were just talking a little bit ago about earning. We have exactly what we earn. It's not about what we deserve. And I wanted to ask you what you thought about languaging in terms of working yourself out of debt. Like for me, I find a lot of times people say, oh, I need a new telephone, I need three more flat screen TVs versus I want. And right, so we tell ourselves a story or we play the victim in, like when I was talking about some people saying, well, your circumstances are different than mine. It keeps me in a victim role because I'm just trying to find excuses not to actually want to move forward with changing my reality.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, we have two goals in life, and one is to travel, one is to prepare for retirement. So often, we're not perfect. We're very often tempted to buy something that we don't need, and we sometimes might think that it's a want, but we do have that discussion between ourselves. And we often say, we can't afford XYZ product, but we're deciding to spend our money in another way. So we try not to say that we can't afford that or we can't have that. We try not to be limiting. We try to position it a bit more positively by saying we could have something else instead.
Yeah, okay. I'll kind of tag on to that. The real key to me here is choice. What are you choosing?
Right.
And you can choose to go out to a really nice dinner and not eat the rest of the week, or you can choose to take your lunch to work and be able to maybe go out for a halfway decent meal later on in the week. There's always a choice that you can make, and it really comes down to recognizing what choices are best for you and your circumstance or situation at the time. We have an acquaintance who got to a certain point in her life, was getting ready to send her second child off to college, and had one at home, getting ready to graduate soon. And she and her husband sat down, and they started talking about their situation in life. What did they need or what did they want? And realized that they owned much more of a house than they needed. And it was actually through a couple of the discussions that we had with them that they finally came to the realization that probably the best thing for them for their ability to retire when they wanted to retire, to have the money that they wanted to have when they planned to retire, to make sure that their children would be able to get through school and they would be able to support or help them if needed, that the best thing would be for them to downsize their house. And they did that. They took the initiative to put their house on the market, bought a house that was half the size, which is interesting because now they have less kids at home needing beds. And so now they have a house that is appropriate for them financially, but also appropriate size for them, for their family. And so right. What if one of the girls has to sleep with her sister when she comes home for the weekend or sleep on the floor? They're not a hotel anymore.
Right. No, exactly. Well, you know, the thing that when I was listening to you talk, the one thing which I think many people do not do is have conversations. You actually talk about the money. You talk about the goals. Or this person you were just talking about was actually looking at what their needs and wants were. And so many people don't take the time to actually have a conversation or speak out loud about what is it that they want. And it's amazing to me how many people, couples, people in relationships, business partners, that just make assumptions about each other or assumptions about their money spending and then don't have the conversations.
Yeah, conversations are key. Being open with each other is so important. And, you know, we're a couple. We have money in the same accounts. And we are more than apt to call each other out on when we see that somebody else spent maybe $3 at a snack bar or something like that. So we both watch each other's finances. But we do have the discussion especially for the bigger purchases, because, you know, everything is shared and it wouldn't necessarily be fair if one person made the decision over the other. Now, that's the way our relationship works, but, you know, in some relationships, one person manages the finances over the other. But I still think it's important for families or couples or whatever relationship you're in, business partners, to make sure that you're open and you have that open dialogue with each other.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Like you had mentioned earlier, there's a lot of baggage that comes with the whole idea of starting the conversations. What do I say? How am I going to start this conversation? So John and I basically have two questions that we think are great questions to use as the springboard for starting those money conversations, because we think that the conversations have the questions have the potential to both be exciting and insightful. And the first question, which is the easy one, is if we were making $10,000 a year more as a couple or as an individual, what would we spend that money on? That'll get the conversation going really quick. Oh, yeah, let's go on vacation, or let's save for college, or let's, you know, people will easily find where they can put that $10,000.
Right.
The reverse of that question and the insightful one is, if I found out that I was going to have to take a $10,000 pay cut, where would I cut back so that I can maintain my life? What would I get rid of? What would I stop doing so that it wouldn't have as much of a negative impact on my life? And kind of the reason we ask those two opposing questions is, for the most part, individuals, if they look at that, that is how we shifted our life from unconscious spending on just whatever we were spending on to focused spending on what we really wanted out of life. Focus that money on saving for retirement and saving for the vacations that we wanted to take, the travel we wanted to do. So we encourage individuals to start off with a couple of easy questions that get that money ball rolling.
Do you find, I mean, I find this sometimes, but I wonder if you find this, when I start to talk to people about setting goals, looking at budgets, they look at me like I've just ruined the party. And nobody can have fun if you're going to mention the word budget. Nobody's going to have any fun if you're going to talk about long-term goals. Do you find that people react or have resistance, or are most people just so ready to do anything that they'll make the shift?
For our experience has been, for the most part, that people are open to talking about their dreams. But when you talk about how they're going to fund those dreams, that's when it kind of goes sour. And then when you bring up the budget discussion, it definitely gets negative for the most part. However, the longer we've been blogging and writing and doing this, people are starting to become a little bit more open to discussing these topics with us. But I don't know that I would bring it up at a party.
Yeah. Yeah. It can dampen the mood.
Right. Yeah. I also think we have to go back to the mental conditioning. We like to say that our budget is the prescription for what we can do.
Right.
And when we sit down and we start talking about money, we always say, what do we want to do? What do we want to do? We don't say, what do we not want to do? We say,
right.
Okay, we want to go to this particular restaurant this week. It's going to cost us $70. That's going to be in our budget. We don't say, well, I can't go golfing and I can't take the kids to this particular entertainment activity. I can't. That is not the purpose of a budget.
Right.
A budget is what your money allows you to do. And fill your life with all of those things that you want to do, because all the other stuff literally is unconscious money spending crap. It's not stuff that you really
right.
want to do. It's just you do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you talk about money conscious, and I use conscious choice, but it's more about being aware and being aware of what we're doing, because a lot of times we do things unconsciously. I have a client who... It just reminded me of this when we were talking about different things. Whenever he finds that he's starting to be attached to his ego around money, he goes out and makes a change. So, for example, he had this amazing two-story, it was a duplex, I guess, but it was an amazing old-fashioned thing that was worth a couple million bucks. He restored it, and everybody knew him for this property that he had. And one day he called me up and he said, oh, I'm selling my property. And I said, wait a minute, you love that property. What's going on? He said, yeah, my ego's actually becoming attached to it, and now it's more important that people like me for my duplex than they do for me, so I'm actually going to sell it and move into a one-bedroom apartment for a while. And just completely gave up keeping with the Joneses. You know, I mean, but a lot of us aren't willing to go into that uncomfortable place.
No,
because we are attached.
And sometimes you have to if you want to turn your situation around. You know, you can't expect, Einstein said, you can't continue to do the same thing and expect different results. So, sometimes you have to take drastic measures. Sometimes you don't have to take as drastic measures. But a change needs to happen. And I think kind of to expand upon the money conscious comments, we definitely – define being money conscious as understanding what it is you want financially and understanding how you spend money and what your personal financial situation is. But we also like to advise our readers and followers to have a fundamental understanding of how the economy works and what's going on in the world. I think economics and finance and all that bores a lot of people. At least that's what I experienced when I was in college. And we think it's important for everybody to have a basic understanding of exactly what's going on in the economy and how will this affect me personally. If prices for groceries are going up, how should I adjust my groceries accordingly?
Absolutely. Well, we want to continue that vein of thought when we come back. It's time for a break. You're listening to the Money Nerve Radio Show, and my guests today are the Debt-Free Guys, and we'll be right back after the break.
The pressure is on. Can you feel it? Life as we've known it is no longer working. Why? We are awakening. The true core self is alive within us now and has a new life to live. What does this mean? How do we live from here? Join us live every third Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern as spiritual embodiment coach and trainer Ambujam Rose explains this mass awakening. Ambujam's direct approach teaches you how to navigate this new wild ride, educates you on how to strengthen your spiritual core, and takes your calls for personal spiritual core training. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Before you start your financial journey, be sure to set your goals. Decide what steps need to be taken to reach your goals and visualize your new financial path. Need some help? Follow The Money Nerve on Facebook and Twitter. And be sure to sign up for The Money Nerve monthly newsletter at themoneynerve.com. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Beauvais on the Love by Intuition show every first and third Sunday, 9 to 10 p.m. Our message is love in the purest form. The light within us all is a guide to recall our beginning, to learn to love self and humankind, to feel the higher power of our own divinity. To attract love, one needs to be love. Every first and third Sunday from 9 to 10 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Are you where you want to be financially? If not, it's time to create a new path. Let go of negative judgments and worry from the past. Embrace yourself and know that you are not alone. Order an autographed copy of Bob's book, The Money Nerve, Navigating the Emotions of Money, at themoneynerve.com. The program is part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Ask Dr. Love is now on the Dream Vision 7 radio network every second and fourth Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Dr. Jamie Turndorf, a.k.a. Ask Dr. Love, is a psychotherapist, author, love and relationship expert who offers advice and answers to your relationship questions. Hear about Dr. Love's groundbreaking new Dialoguing with the Departed technique that enables you to reconnect and make peace with a loved one. This show is for you, the listener, and Dr. Love wants to hear from you. Call 866-338-9663 or 617-237-1234. Listen to the Money Nerve Radio Show with Bob Wheeler on the fourth Sunday of each month. Call into the show at 617-237-1234. Bob wants to hear from you. Sharing your story will help others find a healthy relationship with their money. Celebrate your successful money moments on Twitter with hashtag TheMoneyNerve. Email Bob Wheeler at info@themoneynerve.com. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Life's winding path reveals many truths. Join us every fourth Sunday at 7 p.m. for Healing Journeys with Michael Kobarek, where we explore how in the midst of uncertainty, we can find inner peace and guidance. The healing energy we receive from those who cross our paths, the mystical realms of alternative therapies, and the power to heal that lies within each of us.
To the Money Nerve Radio Show. I'm your host, Bob Wheeler, and today my guests are the Debt-Free Guys. We just came back from a break, and we have a caller on the line, and we're going to go to Lori. How are you doing today?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Do you have a question or a comment?
Well, I do. I love your show. My name is Lori Anderson, and I love the concept, and I love how the Debt-Free Guys, they just have such a great story. So I had a question. I think it's kind of the eternal question. So do you pay off debt first, or do you try and save first? You know, I'm kind of in a quandary and wanted to see if you all could give me some advice.
Sure. I'll go ahead and take that. This is David. We kind of have this thought process of do both. And really the idea is that saving, there is a certain level of saving that you need to have as a protection. A lot of people like to call it an emergency savings account or a rainy day fund, whatever verbiage you prefer to use. We encourage you to have and set aside money for that. For us, we started off with the number of $500. And kind of the reason we did that was because we looked at, well, if if we looked at most of our insurance policies, if we had a major incident happen, we needed to come up with $500. So kind of that was kind of our buffer to say, this is going to be our protection money. So that was our first step in saving. And then after that, we really went full force at paying down our debt. And any time that we had a little bit extra, we would say to ourselves, do we want to throw some extra in our emergency savings, or do we want to put it towards our debt? And it really kind of became the decision point of, you know, sometimes we wanted to save a little bit extra. Maybe there was a time period in the year, maybe we needed some extra money, so we would set some of that aside. But our main focus was paying off our debt. Because the key there to us was, and especially because all of our debt was credit card debt, we were looking at anywhere from 15% to 20% of that. That was the annual percentage rate on our credit cards. So mentally, we said to ourselves, right, it was high. if we're paying that off, we're earning that much because we're not having to pay that. So I can invest, but am I going to earn 15% to 20%? Probably not. So pay down my credit card debt first.
Okay. All righty. Well, that helps me. I just wasn't sure if you had like a ratio, but you're saying pop some of the money in the savings account first so you have a emergency and then really take that debt down. Okay.
Exactly.
Thank you all so much. I really appreciate it. Great show.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Another caller, Susie.
One of the questions that I wanted to ask, and that's a great question because a lot of people do want to know, do I pay off the debt or do I start saving? And I'm in agreement with you. I like to do both because I want to establish that habit of creating a savings, and I also want to see the rewards of starting to make a dent in the debt so that I can feel good about that and then be excited to bring it down even more.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you this, a different question. How does gratitude make a difference in having a rich life, or does it?
It's interesting you ask that, because this week we have something on our blog called the Monday Money Minute, where we have a short video anywhere. every week we have this Monday Money Minute, and we talk about a tidbit of information, whether it's motivational or financial, that has helped us in our lives. And this past week, I did something called GRRR attitude. And really, it kind of got down to the point where on Friday, I was having a really bad day. I was in a really, really bad mood. And it wasn't until I started thinking about and focusing on all of the great things I have in my life that helped me change my mood. And it reminded me back when John and I were first getting out of debt, how we had to do that regularly. Because getting out of debt is never going to be as fun as getting into debt.
Right.
And so
that's probably true.
If you can look around and say, what can I be thankful for? What do I have? And it's so easy once you start doing it to just create this massive list of all the things that you can be thankful for. And it's those things that you can go back to from time to time and say, I'm so thankful that I was able to buy a car at one point, that I don't have to take the bus, you know, or that I don't have to walk 8 miles to work like some individuals do. You know, or I'm so thankful that I have a roof over my head and that it's one that I own. Now, find the things that you can be thankful for and focus on those. They will help motivate you when you're getting out of debt.
No, that sounds great. Well, we have another caller, so let's get Susie on the line. Susie?
Hello? Yes?
Hi, you have a comment? Question?
Oh, I do. You know, I follow the debt-free guys from afar, and, you know, one thing I'm always impressed upon is their ability to have a fun life, yet manage this debt-free or money-conscious lifestyle. I guess helping me understand how they balance that would be interesting to hear, along with maybe, you know, I like to spend money on fun things, and how do I limit that?
Great question. So we have a little strategy that we call NSE, which stands for not so expensive. We definitely enjoy fine things in life, the quality things, but in line with focusing on what it is we most want out of life, in other areas, where are there ways that we can kind of cut back a little bit? So, you know, rather than buying a, $30 or $40 bottle of wine, is there a not-so-expensive alternative that we can use to replace that $30 bottle of wine with?
And maybe not get the box.
Maybe not get the box. Also, it sounds like you have children, so, it's expensive to take kids to a movie these days. It can cost you $50 to $100 or more, depending upon how many children you have and how much they need to eat. So is there an alternative of staying at home and watching movies on Netflix or Hulu, or and then even inviting neighborhood kids over or neighborhood families over? So the idea is to just find slightly less expensive alternatives to the things that you like to do already, so you can funnel the money that you do have or the money that you save towards the things that you most want out of life.
That's good. A good idea, but that also requires you to be technologically astute. So maybe you should provide... provide some resources there. I just had a child fall, so I'm sorry.
That's okay. Now, John hits on a good point here. Is there's no matter what it is that you want to do, there's always an alternative that can provide the same amount of enjoyment, but maybe not cost as much, or in some cases free. We were fortunate to hook up with an acquaintance this year who provided us with a list. It's actually on our website, a list of over 1,000 things that you can do in Denver that are either free or cheap. And we encourage our followers and the listeners here to regularly go out and just create a list, have them in your back pocket of these are the things that we can do and not spend so much money. And the other nice thing is that once you're out of debt, because you're not servicing that debt, you're not paying that extra 10, 15, 20% on your credit card, that all of a sudden becomes extra money that is now in your budget for either enjoying or for saving. And that allows you to do that little bit more.
That's a great point. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in. So I think the point that you're making, which is a good one, is that look for options, look for alternative solutions so that you're not, you can still have the fun. You're not saying don't have fun. Because sometimes people will say to me, you're telling me if I have to look at a budget or if I have to curb my spending, you're telling me I can't go out and shop. You're telling me I can't go out and do this. And I tell people, I'm never telling you not to do anything. Do what you want, but do it consciously so that if you're choosing to go into debt, just charge that card away and say, oh, man, great, I just added another $1,000 to my debt. I'm so excited, and own it versus, instead of pretending like it just didn't happen.
Yeah, it's definitely about being conscious and thinking of alternatives, but it's also like David's point in having a plan and having those back pocket ideas of how you're going to be able to entertain yourself or satiate various desires that you might have. Just have that plan so you can always refer back to it when you need to.
Well, that is great information. I have loved this conversation. We're actually running out of time, so let me quickly ask you, where can we learn more about the Debt-Free Guys?
We're on most social medias, but if you just go out and search for Debt-Free Guys on Google or Bing, you'll find us. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, great conversation.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Great having you on the show. We'll have to do a workshop together sometime in Denver. That would be fun.
Oh,
I don't know if you do those.
That'd be great.
That'd be a lot of fun. But thanks again for joining us. And again, reminding everybody out there that this is the Money Nerve Radio Show. Please join us next month at the same time. Be well and spend wisely.
Do you value financial freedom? Ready to push debt away and redefine your goals? Join CPA Bob Wheeler each month on the Money Nerve Radio Show. And be sure to visit themoneynerve.com to read Bob's weekly blog and download some of his favorite financial tools. You can have a healthy relationship with your money.